Hello, everybody. This is the Gingerbread Man, and I would like to welcome you to my home. Today, I have with me a very good friend. This is going to be Corey. We work together, and we've had and shared many intense days on the front lines of grilling people food. And so he's here today to discuss what he is interested in and why we all should be more creative in the future.
Hi. So, I don't know what to say here, but hello.
What do you do? What is your chief interest in creativity?
Well, I don't know. It's a hard question to say because I have so many different interests, but what I'm looking into now is animation and that kind of stuff. I do Twitch streams and I try to just, feel free, I guess.
Feel free?
Okay. In, if you want to say that.
Makes sense to me. I feel free when I'm making shit.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that's pretty much helped save my mental health over the past couple of years, because I think as humans, we all find ourselves in this pinch point of crisis for purpose. Like, one of the things that really saved me was being able to express myself and being able to make things. And it doesn't matter what those things are. And this project is an example of that, you know, but making anything is a very free feeling, I would say, you know?
Yeah. You're not wrong.
So, describe your animation. We've been talking about this over the past couple weeks. You have a theme starting to come together.
I do have a theme. It's a very rough theme, and it's very, very incomplete. The actual product itself is not ready to go public, but my idea is basically, I have this character who was a vat grown character sometime in the fairly near future.
Clarify, that's vat. Like
vat,
like
as in
baby in a barrel.
Basically baby in the barrel. You know, you get a basic human, you know, reproductive stuff. You know, you get your eggs, you get your sperm, combine them together into a vat of embryonic fluids, and you just let it grow. Something similar to letting it grow up. You know, actual parent, but just not an actual parent.
Mm-hmm. So this makes me think of The Matrix first. I see all the people that are plugged in for the... they were even harvesting their electrical signals for the wave.
They were, weren't they?
Yeah, that was their fuel source, was the humans.
Yeah.
And that makes me think of a lot of things. I know that
it sounds very similar to a lot of other things that I've seen. Yeah.
First Divide, one of the things that we do nowadays is growing organs in petri dishes. So
yeah,
that would be the first real world step towards this fictional hypothesis.
There's that. There's also some experiments happening with neural networks being grown in a petri dish. Like, they've experimented trying to grow a brain in a petri dish with limited success,
mm-hmm.
which I find very interesting.
Mm. What's cool is these cells do it on their own, too.
It's literally just a growth and reproduction system. They're
in the genetic code.
Yeah. They're reproducing what they lost through failures, trying to gain more out of, you know, the failures, and making sure those failures don't happen again.
Interesting. So
That's neural networks more specifically, but, like, with actual embryos, those are very interesting.
But if people had the capacity to grow a baby in a vat, you'd have a lot more control, you know.
A lot more control.
Which brings up the topic of eugenics, which is a big scary word. And,
it is a very scary word.
Race propriety over who and what is desirable in the first place. You know?
You can very easily pick and choose genetics. If I remember correctly, there was I don't remember if you said something about it or I saw something about it on the internet. Somebody was able to modify their genetics with a machine.
Mm-hmm. CRISPR.
Yeah. And that just, like, you put that in the sense of, like, vat grown. You literally take a little, like, basically a sperm cell, genetically change it with this machine, put it into this vat. There you go. You have a basic germ genetics right there for you.
Mm-hmm. And so one of the books that has been a big effect in my life is Brave New World by Aldous Huxley. And he would describe these conveyor systems because in this world, babies were no longer born. So to speak about being pregnant was like blasphemy. you know, and like it was unheard of in this society. So all children were born from these like breeding centers, basically, where they'd have these conveyors with vats on them, and then there'd be several layers of conveyors, you know, like a tent.
Basically, like a factory. I would imagine something like I've seen glove factories where you're having these gloves hang to dry, basically, yeah, in these big long conveyors in this area.
Mm-hmm. And so the ones that are at the lead are given all their right nutritions, and they're given all these like boosters and all these like environmental stimulants that help the baby be more adaptable. And, you know, and these are called the alpha peoples. But the longer and longer the conveyor goes, they start running bizarre and bizarre experiments on these little vats that have these babies in them. And the main character is walking along by this breeding inspector while he's describing to him about how they'll starve the babies for 40 minutes every day of oxygen, you know, and they'll stop the oxygen lead and they'll let the babies go anaerobic for a little bit and then they'll bring them back, basically. And then that's the epsilon people, you know, like...
That's so interesting.
So they're breeding all these subpar, like, ranks of people, you know, like, for the other people, which has always been the big fear with eugenics, because mm-hmm. the main proponent of eugenics would be, like, Nazi Hitlerism. You ever heard of Lievenstrasse?
Maybe. I think so.
That's what they were attempting to do in Poland. So when mm-hmm. they went to Poland, not only did I not know this, so the Polish Jewish population during the time of World War II, Poland had 86% of the world's Jews. And just in that one country. And so Hitler found this group of people that had been historically destigmatized. And they went in and they had this Lievenstrasse plan, which was basically translatable to make space. And the plan was they were going to take the Polish population and turn them into a slave race.
Right.
Make space for the German people. Use the Polish population to produce income and produce like raw faculty for the Germans. You know? And it just screams a Brave New World to me again. Like if people had the choice, I think the best way to keep it safe is if parents were experimenting on their babies.
Right. That's kind of where I'm taking it with my storyline, basically. Basically, the parents of my character were trying to grow a vat baby because they couldn't grow one naturally. So very scuffed, very like... backyard science kind of deal. They make their own vat and they make their own, you know, fetus. That also implies to the fact that I'm thinking into like, what if there was a contaminant in these breeding cycles? You know, if I get a hair of something else in there, you know, mm-hmm. for example, a koala bear, you know,
a koala bear hair
in or there? Like in the actual vat, what if, you know, a very small amount of the DNA from an external source, non-human, mm-hmm. enters a human breeding cycle?
Oh, jeez.
And that's kind of where I'm taking my anime and my kind of story into that kind of deal.
That's cool.
It is cool.
So would there be like all kinds of diverse like animal people?
That's what I'm trying to do as well. I'm trying to see how, like, that's a different story, but what sense of difference can we have with humans and make, I don't know, these hybrid animals, basically? Mm-hmm. Why, if you look on Twitch, if you look up VTuber, why would you see a bear girl? Why would you see a cat girl? Why would you see a harpy dragon girl?
There's been furries for decades.
I mean, there has been furries for decades, but those are people dressing up as animals.
Yeah, there's some people who take that very seriously.
There are, absolutely. And I respect them because it's their choice.
Hell yeah.
It's just not for me.
Yeah, for damn sure. But still, that's an intense...
But it's very intense.
It's better in baby people. You ever see people who like to be babies?
I don't want to remember that. Oh, no. I'll pass. Thank you very much.
Okay.
But basically, I'm thinking of... Why would you see these VTubers dressed, not even dressed, but like they're physically based off of other animals, mm-hmm. mythical or not? So I'm thinking of what if this is the situation that's happening, and then in the near future, that's what it looks like. You know, if I accidentally, if a koala hair or like koala, like skin follicle comes into contact with this breeding cycle, and if it's not extracted quick enough, like what if it is part of the growing cycle?
Mm-hmm.
This is that's kind of what my character is based around. Like, what if this actually happens?
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Kind of like Spider-Man.
Actually, yeah. A little bit.
Like,
in a way.
But with more sci-fi insert, which is so modern, you know?
A modern sci-fi.
Yeah.
In a sense. Because Vacarons, if you... Like, it's not a new idea exactly, but, like, it's more of a... Like, you can actually kind of do it nowadays more than you could have
You can
20 years ago,
so
really.
The way the real world version of this is choosing eggs and sperm. So what they've been able to do is been able to test really well how virile sperm is and how good the eggs are. And if they match them up pretty good, they can get pretty good at running phenotypes for humans. You know, and like just based off of a rough genetic survey of the parents. So you can get damn close to picking your baby with blue eyes. Whereas it might have been a 1 in 8 chance prior, now you can make it almost a 95% chance to have a kid with blue eyes if you wanted to.
Yeah.
You know,
like, that could also be experimented into a different kind of genetics, a xenogenetics, where you're pick and choosing very specific genotypes to be of a non-natural, quote-unquote, like sector. For example, if you take like you take some very specific genes from very specific animals, try to make a vampire kind of person, you know, weakness to light, not kind of stuff, but, you know, relies on blood for their life, basically. You know, we eat food like they would eat blood.
Well, I'm sure there are animals that have that in their biology. So within this schema, why not have somebody be spliced with that fucking genetic? You have a lot
You have a new xenotype.
You've got a lot of choice there. With, like, you can just start.
You can be very picky choosy about it, and there's new technologies that would let you be able to do this kind of pick and choose. Like, oh, I really want I'm trying to think of a good example. A Hulk, like a very large, very tall person, very like ogre-like. They can do a lot of physical tasks, but their mental is just kind of, you know? Or you could think, you could choose, you know, perfect xenotypes to make the perfect, sharpest brain in the world. Think of everything new and everything perfectly.
Interesting.
You know? What if... Just what ifs, you know?
Okay. So now it's...
That's kind of what my whole story is based on.
Let's investigate further. So in this universe, is it completely backyard? Because I've heard you say that. So is it...
It's not 100% backyard. So, just the way that the parents did, my parents did it, it was a backyard because it's still under...
Understood. Is it regulated is my question. Because there could be drama around the regulation of this.
Very experimental regulations. Like you... The public looks at it, the society will look at vat-grown babies as unnatural because of how limited and how lab-grown it is.
Is it legal?
They haven't come to a consensus about that.
If you make it illegal, there's so much drama.
You can make it into a very dramatic point. But at this very early stage of what my character is growing up with, basically, it's a very experimental, not heard of, but in this, like, basically where you have these labs experimenting these vat-grown people, you know, close proximity, people will hear about this. The whole society will at least understand what's going on in those labs because some news would have broken out about them. And then, you know, the people just kind of brush it off or go into it kind of deal. Cool. That's where my character's parents... One of them is one of these scientists. Another one is a general biologist. And basically, they came together with their understanding of this to make a baby. And it was one of the more successful ones, tell you fact. This is one of the most successful vat-growns, where in the lab, the maybe for mortality rate of these new fetuses would be like 80, 70%, somewhere around those, where this one actually succeeded. It was a 1 in 1 chance.
Spare chance.
Yep. And it's just in this time frame, in that time frame of that, it's a very... Local communities are very controversial about it. Some people like it, some people hate it. And basically what my character's goal is to vocalize it more. And she's actually found a group, small, like 5-10 group of these escaped vat-grown babies or abandoned vat-grown babies in these houses for the unnatural or something like that. You know, make it seem like it's all, like, you aren't natural, but, you know, if we do kill you, it'll be a whole nother legal system we have to look into now, you know, instead of, oh, it's just a vat-grown baby. It's now a born vat-grown baby who's actually, could under the law, could be considered a person. That's where controversy starts. Is this an actual person or
unless
not?
Unless some weird bigoted fundamentalist group of whatever shows up and it's like, if you're not 100% human, you're not human. You ain't it. You know?
We'll start getting the pure bloods and we'll start getting the vat grows.
Oh, man.
We have the pure blood humans, you know, natural babies. It's kind of what I'm thinking of, but what if I jump on that train before, you know, too many other people get on there? That's kind of what I'm trying to get at with that.
Interesting.
But it's in that same situation of, we'll still have this group of people who are like, if you're not 100% fucking human, you're not human.
Well,
but at the same
time,
we're
doing it now over skin color, with whatever direction it's going, you know, whoever's slinging what, you know, like racial tension is a thing still in our country.
If we get enough of these people voting for these rules,
they're gonna support our whatever rules.
Yeah, we have the purebloods voting for things because they're more present in the world, but we look at the vat-growns as becoming more of a mainstream thing, where something in like that book there, what was it?
Which one? Brave New World?
Yeah, Brave New World. You look at Brave New World and we kind of, that'll be like 200 years in the future where vat-grown is the mainstream now. Yeah. You know, everybody's vat-grown.
They've got it right down to science.
Yeah. And I'm thinking of what if the very start of this lab-grown, like, experiments, you know, starts going more mainstream. What if people really say, like, you're not human if you're vat-born? Mm-hmm. So, you know.
I think it'll be a really good substrate to talk about even real-world issues through if you wanted to. Once you have your universe created, which I want to talk more about that in a little bit, like more the meta, the creation side of what it feels like to make a universe and to think about these things. Mm-hmm. But like, what does it mean to do that, actually? That's what I want to talk about now.
Well, what exactly?
What does it feel like to make these universes?
So,
what does it feel like to imagine something? Because even when you speak about it,
it depends.
You can see it in your eyes because you can see that you see it.
Yeah. Basically, I have this whole universe, this whole world, like even the buildings and people in these cities, down to a very fine detail in my mind. Mm-hmm. But through physical or mental limitations, I can't say all of it or I can't put it all onto paper. I can't let other people see about it.
You just plain don't want to, and that's 100% okay.
It's the same as writing a book. It's the same as making a video for YouTube even. Mm-hmm. Like, you have this world. You have your own little personal world. Why would you want everybody else to look into this world? A lot of people have these universes and these thoughts already.
These imaginations.
Is my world. I want to keep my world, and you don't get to know it. Where other people who are creative, like
I'm envious because I didn't share that bright inner world when I was younger.
A lot of people have their own inner worlds that they create, and they think they're the one in the universe, you know? They're the gods.
Just the capacity of imagination. I was so boring when I was younger. I didn't have the capacity to imagine anything like what you're describing. And you can tell that you've had practice.
I know. And
I still can't make a world like that in my head. I can't write a fiction story to save my life because I'm just going to end up copying something else that I read because I don't have that. I don't have that facet.
It's that creativity.
Yeah. But there's a lot of people who do have that. There's this mass spectrum of being. you know?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of different axes that could be on that spectrum. You know, and in just
so many.
And just
so many more than just the creative world, which I would see it as this just little kind of, you know, off brand kind of stuff.
Branch, exactly.
You know?
But like, but even like, those spaces of creativity between where I would consider myself dead boring, you know, and then there's people like you and Calvin who has an incredible imagination too.
Yeah.
You know? Like, but then the way that you build your worlds is always going to be completely unique. Mm-hmm. But what I'm fascinated about is that creative process, you know, because like, some people do it in their dreams. I was telling you about this some other day. I have a friend who she's been coming to this town in her dreams every single night since she was a kid. She could describe it to me verbatim, like while she was awake. And she would describe knowing people and houses, and it was a town that she'd never been to in real life because it was completely only existent inside her own brain.
That kind of comes with, I don't know really specifically, but like, it's just that kind of natural knack, I guess. Like one part of your brain is more developed than the other or something. And I think with dreams specifically is where a lot of creativity does start, actually. Because this is basically what came into my dreams. But, you know, these are little tiny tidbits. Your dreams are just like 5-10 minutes of just this one little section of your imagination.
Interesting.
And then
how you just conceived of that. That's yeah, pretty cool.
Yep. I found myself really practicing that kind of just on the spot making this. Because that makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And there's some people who suppress this as soon as they wake up. They go conscious, all of their dreams die.
Or are they so eager to look at all the things that they have to do? I gotta get up. I gotta go piss.
I
gotta go shake. I'm thirsty. I need to go make breakfast. I gotta get ready for work. I'm uncomfortable. Even if it's on the day off, I'm rolling over. You know, the sun's a little bright. There's a thousand reasons that are beckoning and calling as soon as you wake up, trying to drag you away from that spirit of intuitiveness.
So I kind of look at it as a two. So in our brain specifically, we basically look at what we see in reality and feel in reality like we would watch TV. Mm-hmm. And basically, in your head, you're going to sleep, you're going into this other world, and that's your neural imagination. And so when we go into our neural imagination, that our secondary world, we can't remember anything in the real world.
So
most of everything.
There's this selective amnesia in both directions.
Exactly.
Okay.
So how can we tell if we are part of our natural world or are we part of our secondary world that just kind of popped up? Exactly.
What if this is a dream right now?
What if this specifically is a dream and when I go to sleep is actually when I wake up in the real world?
Yeah.
So
I get
you have these kind of two-way systems. I'm way too materialistic to think that when I go in my world, that's actually the world. I see what we're living in right here, right now. I can touch you
dreaming,
and I can touch this bed here.
When you're dreaming lucidly, do you ever have feelings of it being awkward, like it's not real? Like, do you ever catch yourself feeling that way? Like, ever?
But no, actually. Huh. When the few times that I had lucid dreams, I would wake up into this, my actual reality, thinking that what happened in the dream actually happened.
Huh.
I've never felt uncomfortable in the dreams, but I felt uncomfortable out of the dreams. When I wake up and it's just like, this isn't right. Didn't this happen yesterday? No. What do you mean?
And I'll get that. Like, I'll get that.
I think everybody gets that, really.
But that's how I found my way into dreams. Because when I was younger, I never dreamed. Like, and I didn't have any clear, like, when I was a kid, it was like a snap of a finger. Like, I closed my eyes and opened them.
Mm-hmm.
That was my sleep cycle.
I envy those kinds of people because I wish that I do that.
Most times it still is, and it's probably because of marijuana, because there's a lot of studies showing that marijuana before bed and alcohol before bed and any depressant. I do not just say anything like melatonin. I bet you it probably fucks with your sleep too.
Oh, it definitely does.
You know, but like, most of the time, I still pretty much cold cock go through. And I'll wake up like 6 times throughout the night, and that gives me continuity to know that I slept.
Yeah.
You know, like, okay. A couple times, it's time to wake up now. You know, but like, my dreams are probably, nowadays, they're the most recurring than they've ever been. And I would say probably once a month. I'll have a clear dream.
Interesting.
But most of the ways
I can kind of say the same thing for me as well. I used to be able to dream pretty good when I was a kid, but lately I've noticed that I would go to sleep and then I'll wake up and I have no dreams. Huh. But occasionally, like once a week, twice a week, I'll sometimes have these dreams, lucid or not, and I can remember them for the most part.
Interesting.
And I think that's kind of where I'm getting my creativity out of.
Yeah.
You know, if you have too many dreams, you're going to think, or you're going to have too many imaginations, and this real world start turning into this fake world that is in your dreams.
Mm-hmm. Ram Dass said you can get as high as you want, but you always have to remember your zip code.
That's funny.
Yeah. So
I mean,
if we do start to choose now, because of course we just said, you know, this could be the dream world as well. And if we go completely skeptical, that might be a way to go. But
and that might be what other skeptics think of, like, this can't be the real world.
But let's choose, you know, for the sake of argument to say that this is the real world. Mm-hmm. And let's go, for sake of argument, to investigate further into the source of creativity, which I find very interesting. So I'm dreaming more than I ever have in my life. But over the last 4 or 5 years, I've made conscious efforts to make myself uncomfortable, to cultivate and grow this creative side of myself that I've fostered like a baby. Mm-hmm. You know, like I found little bits of myself being able to express myself, like probably only like within the very short recent past, like the only four-ish years. You know, all before that, like I felt like almost a different person before I started on this quest of trying to express myself. And I'm like,
yeah.
The thing about creation, you know, is that this was this piece of me that I was completely not intact with for most of my life because I was so logical, and I was very I was very deadheaded logical, and I didn't have the natural inclement, the natural biological inclement like you. I was dry and logical, and so all I had was my books. And Calvin can tell you, I would have read 1,500 facts about some science thing that I'd read with complete conviction, you know, mm-hmm. because I had all these things that I'd read in my head, but that's what I was giving people. I was giving people all these things that I'd read, and I wasn't making up any ideas for myself. And so I see this connection with me dreaming more because I'm fostering the side of myself that is completely separate from that logical, you know, authoritarian me that mm-hmm. makes decisions all the time and has to. Thank God he does, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like, but
on that same note,
so that creative, so there's people like Carl Jung who would have called it the unconscious. You know, Carl Jung and mm-hmm. Sigmund Freud are going to be the two prominent psychotherapists who would put the word unconscious into the group narrative that everybody speaks about now. That unheard side of you. And I feel very interesting that you mentioned this amnesia that you see, because I don't have any control of my dreams. And so you actually can come back and give me information, which is invaluable.
Yeah. You really just got to look at it as like a two-way street. You can just imagine, you know, one way's going one way, the other way's going another way, and there's this wall here, uh-huh. and nobody knows that, you know, this exists.
So that
unconscious. There's some of these people, like me, who see through this wall. Yeah. Like, this wall seems a little bit lower. I can see over that wall. This wall is just more transparent than for other people.
And there's things that knock it down. There's
things that knock it down.
There's chemical substances, and then there's physical, real world circumstances that can completely break a person down to where they start to see those parts of themselves that they didn't know.
Yeah. And seeing these two way streets, seeing this one way street as actually two way street, kind of opens up your reality and seeing how this other reality. Uh-huh. And sometimes you can find your actual self in this other alternate reality, this multi-dimension fucking universe that we might think we are in. You know, we see ourselves on this other side, we see ourselves on this side, and sometimes, you know, we can see ourselves in our dreams and actually go towards that dreams. You know, what if I was like that other person? You know,
yeah.
And for other people, they see the whole world. You know. And they can kind of see, like, they can see more generalized specifics, I guess. Hmm. So you see, instead of just you seeing yourself through this wall, you see more of the city, you see more of the world, more of the universe you see yourself in. Dang. So
Rather than the sense of identity in it. I get what you're trying to say.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah. It that's more or less what I'm trying to say is, like, instead of your self-identity, you can see more of this generalized world.
When I consider the unconscious, the way that I feel like I've been interacting with it, you you know, is that when I lean into that part of me, it feels bottomless. It's like you jumped into the deep end of the pool and you realize, and that's awesome.
And that's a bit of fear
that I felt too, is I've fallen belly deep into my unconscious with my identity long behind me. And I felt just this immensity of just, it's like sitting in infinity in there, just inside of me.
And I kind of want to question that feeling. I want to see if other creators,
every human being does, depends.
I'm just very curious on other people's thought on that. Yeah. Would you see yourself going through a pit of time where you lost your past identity and made yourself this new creativity in this bottom, of the pit, really?
Have you ever researched the term ego death?
I haven't researched it, but I think you've told me a couple of bits about it.
So, but it's a common thing with serotonergic substances that people will commonly describe is this loss of identity and the separation between the thing they thought they were wholly. Not mm-hmm. that it's fake, and I don't mean to say sarcastically, but it's like for some people, they think that this is their entire existence is this personality, you know? Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, they find themselves completely separated from that. And they don't even remember who it was, but they're still looking at things. You know, like that's a very bizarre situation that's shaken me because I grew up as a Christian, but throughout mm-hmm. my prominent youth from the time I was probably about 16 until probably about 2 or 3 years ago, I was a cold-blooded atheist. And I kind of can attest
to that. I kind of was the same way.
I was bitterly still atheist. Still kind of am. And I would go and talk to people on purpose and try to persuade them out of their faith, you know, like, because mm-hmm. I was very confident in my certainties about reality. And then all of a sudden, you know, I took a substance that threw me out of the water.
Dropped you down this pit more.
And this just made me so confounded about a lot of things.
So my creativity brain over here is making me think of this bottomless pit. What if it is a truly bottomless pit that infinitely goes, but these bottomless pits actually have levels in the middle of them?
I guess that's
what And saying. Other people find themselves in different kinds of levels. These mm-hmm. levels are different sized parts away from each other.
Or a spectrum.
Very differently, you know, varied. You know, how far from another pit can you fall into this other pit? And then, you know, how much of this one level is, you know, this big. You can find yourself in these big groups more often than not, and then the few people who are on the edge kind of fall into these pits, or they really try their best to get back into the main group, you know. With this growing population of humans, we kind of fall into these pits more and more and more and more, and we find other peoples in these other different levels of the pit of the main humanity. That's what I'm thinking of. I'm seeing
a picture someday, but
I'm seeing right at the fucking top, right up here, is the start of life.
Yeah.
Your brain just formed its first neuron.
Right.
This is where you are. And as you grow more and more and more, you're going to find yourselves falling through pits. You're going to have yourself hard times. You're going to have to pick yourself up, back up off your fucking ass.
So your pit is a demoralized section. Would that be an apt descriptor?
I wouldn't say demoralizing because it's more of you change.
True, because and out of struggle comes growth.
Exactly. And I look at it as you're falling through this pit, you find yourself in these levels. Some people can find their levels a lot faster and a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
More people lately have been falling further and further and trying to find themselves.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably where my generation starts to have problems, because we're so far down this pit because everybody else is pushed us off the edge. Because
you're looking for purpose.
Yeah, we're looking for purpose.
We see how
many other people are on this mental level, and we either try to go into that more and more, but there's going to be people who fall off out of force, more or less. And I can think of like very
system,
pushy parents
the
pushing their parents off, or their children off the edge, and they have to find their own by themselves. But there's also parents who help them bring them into their level. Or there's these individuals or parents who guide their children basically through this pit. The parents themselves are just continuously falling through this pit. And, you know, they have a child that they're like, oh, we really don't want them to be falling down this pit with us. So we're going to try to push them onto a ledge that we think fits.
You know? Okay. You lost me with some of the metaphors, but you give me back
every I'm little... so... This is kind of a rabbit hole thought for me, though.
You build on it. I really encourage you to go build on it, write down on it.
And, yeah, I see it as kind of a falling pit, but used throughout perspective. You see people on these edges, on these levels, seeing these people come from fucking highest top of their fucking list. It's like, oh my god, you're actually with my level, you know? And there's other people you see fall off and you're just like, oh, they're shitty, you know? So you can see it as a moralizing or demoralizing.
Is there a way to not have, like, because when I look at, it's hard for me to think of anybody that's above me, you know? Because, but first of all, I don't want what anybody else has, first and foremost, because I'm too stubborn, you know? And like, so I've never been envious. Well, I am envious. I'm envious of your creativity. Like, I'm envious of things like that. Those kind of things make me very envious. But
and it just kind of comes out at random, too.
When it comes to this material world, though, like, especially when I look at people, you know, when I look at the others, which there's me inside my inner sanctum, and then there's the outside world, which has populated by a lot of people. And I'm interacting with a lot of people all the time. But I choose to see... You know, I've told you this within my own little hoodoo system. I choose to see every single person as a little divinity, you know, because I think for me that whatever God is or whatever people are trying to say what God is that unconscious. Mm-hmm. It is that bottomless abyss inside me.
It's this alternate world on the other side of the
everything the in it. And it's like looking in like a mirror. Almost. It's like the universe looking back at itself, almost. And what that's made me think is when I talk to anybody, you know, when I look into anybody's eyes that has the ability to communicate with me, you know, like my version of God's talking right back at me, you know, because everything that has life, that has that ability to see themselves, that has that self-awareness for me is a God, you know, in a way, you know, and has that has that unconscious in them. And then it gets even shadier. Me and Calvin have had a couple disagreements on whether an animal has that sense of ability to conceive and have.
And I mean, and in a way, anything neurological, maybe, anything that has a brain.
Brahma would say the fucking atoms, the rocks, you know? In Hinduism, the world is Brahma. And so the world, it's like we're like a cell belonging to this creature, and Brahma's
the universe. And that's what I see.
And Brahma's the universe.
Yeah. You know, and so everything in that we see, to say our cells not
are,
see.
Well, maybe our cells are on little head trips, and maybe all of our cells are having conflictions about their feelings too. You know, because how far back does the universal unconscious go?
I mean, you can look at it that way. I'm way too realistic to see, or like materialistic to see, like
But you
the
taste
very
it.
Basics
you
taste of it.
You taste what I'm saying.
I know. I see what you're saying, and it's really cool to think of. But like I'm a little too stubborn. I don't want to like embrace it fully, but it's still cool.
A little bit more mushrooms.
But it's such an interesting thought when you look at somebody else and say they're God. They're another cell in this system that
you know. Our coworker that I've been having difficulties with. Yeah. Which is something I was able to lean back into today, was able just trying to love him again and just doing all my little things that I could to show him that I was paying him attention. And I know it made him profoundly uncomfortable because it confused the shit out of him.
Yeah.
But it was very good for me to be able to lean back into what I feel is my natural inclement, which is just to do that. And that's typically how I interact with anybody. You know?
Like I kind of do the same way thing too. I when I meet a new person or like I'm talking to somebody, some random person, I will look at them with the same respect as, you know, one of my good friends.
Can you look at a stranger and love them?
It depends.
Can you look at a fly, at some little tiny flying creature landing on a piece of grass and love it really deeply? Because I've sat in meditation on the grass and practiced that, and it's really good for me.
I find it's very situational. If I'm in that kind of mindset, then maybe.
Yeah.
But at that same time, I could just see it as the materialistic thing. It's like, oh, it's just a fly. Hello, fly.
This is but at the same time, so it's a practice.
I look at everything really with the same respect as I look at the people that I know and
so when
the
we objects lift weights, that I know. Lifting weights is a physical practice. So mm-hmm. we approach it at first, and it's difficult.
And,
but yoga is a practice. And so this is something I've been practicing for a couple of years.
The mental
practice. And it started as an experiment at first, just to see what would happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it embraced my entire being. You know, like just being able to go love people. Even somebody
and that's just kind of finding your place.
Even somebody who's threatened you. Because I was mm-hmm. able to look at him today and know that in my heart I still loved him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I used to. Even though I got lost.
I still look at him with the same respect as I met him, but yeah. it's at that same time.
But like, I lost myself in this head trip for almost 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And today was the first moment for over 2 weeks that I was able to step outside of that and feel myself again. You know, like, because that's my real being.
Yeah.
It's just being able to unconsciously do that no matter what. Doesn't matter what anybody does, for any reason. The only reason I'm doing it is because that's what I'm supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that's how I approach it. And there might be a different way of doing it for you. I'm not prescribing this. I'm not prescribing you. But you
know, I can say for certain that how everybody treats those situations are not going to be the same
yeah.
ways you treat those situations. And that's just out of nature. Like we can't think exactly the same way as you did because you, even if you're sitting 1 inch apart away from me. We have grown in two completely different worlds.
Yeah. I just wish you could have seen me just a couple of years ago. How much have I changed?
I would have been interested.
How much have I changed over the last couple of years?
Quite a bit.
I wish you could have seen me just 5-6 years ago. I wish you could have seen me when I was 21. Like, I was a very different being.
I mean, you've told me the stories of it.
I'm turning 28 this year.
28.
Yeah. Cal is 30, right? 31?
Yeah, we're not that different in age, but we used to be
yeah.
very different.
When I first met him, I was like a freshman when I first sophomore when I first met him. So he was like the older kid.
Mm-hmm.
Like and now it doesn't even feel like it.
I know
that happens though. And that's just kind of knowing another person and how they think and see how they see their world.
Yeah.
But there are some people who just cannot grasp that. You've seen another world than me.
I made this brick by brick on purpose. And a lot of it was with tears and with mistakes by hurting people.
Mm-hmm.
But I made this.
But mistakes are going to happen if you want to learn.
Anybody
if you don't want to learn, you're not going to hurt anybody. But everybody's on their own system of learning. They always want to. That's human nature. We want to learn more. We want to grow our brain.
Do you think that it's possible to help other people want to nurture that part of themselves?
I completely forgot what you just said to me. I'm over here in my own world thinking about myself, and I'm thinking about the things that I think of. You asked me that question. It just went in one ear and out the other ear.
Very self-aware. That's good, though.
I mean, yeah, I look at it... I look at that kind of situation as in like it's a learning opportunity, but that's also just me. That's how I am.
It is
very. I can do that.
Yeah. So, original question. I want to help empower other people. This is part of my purpose on this planet. Is I want to help empower other people to help nurture that side of themselves that can help want to make themselves. Because there's a part of us that can break ourselves down and reconstruct ourselves. We can make who we are.
We always have our second person.
We are subjective beings and we are impressionable, but we also have an immense control over what we want to be and what we want to see through ideals.
With enough time, you can make something happen.
So, do you think it's possible to inspire other people and be able to empower them to be able to make themselves whatever they want to be?
I do see in a way... I've been trying to do that with my closest friend, my other people that I meet. I try to nurture what they want and what they ultimately desire.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think of, I approach those kind of situations in a very open-minded way. Mm-hmm. When I first met you, I didn't have any expectations. You started talking to me about you. I mean, yes, I will always look at somebody with expectations. But I feel like,
you. Every time you give me an expectation, I give you the opposite, and then I confuse you.
Exactly, which is very hard for a very materialistic person like me. Which I try to relate everything to everything. Mm-hmm. So
if you try to label me as something, I'm going to give you the opposite until you're
I cannot label you.
You have no idea what
you're. You're literally one of the only people that I honestly cannot put a label on. You're just everything to me, really. Yeah. And you've opened this other side of world to me where I can. I look at myself. I can label myself, but why label yourself when you? Try to label, and why are you trying to label yourself and you're trying to label other people when you could look at somebody and just be like, you are a person.
Mm-hmm. You have an immense control over your future.
So,
and you're a beautiful being that I think is amazing. And if you empower somebody and tell them how amazing they are,
now
they're gonna go do incredible things. Because we are,
it's kind of a double, it's kind of like a hiltless blade on that kind of situation. You can do that, but at that same time, they're going to, if they have any force back to that, it's not going to feel that great.
Well, a lot of
and,
the times when you go
you can push through it, fine. But, like, there's some things that you hit, and it's just some people you talk to, and you're like, you can do amazing things. They'll come right back at you, and it's like, you're an optimistic. I hate you. Goodbye.
Sure. And there are some people that I can't impress upon.
You can't make everybody happy.
Yeah, and like our boss, you know, I had to give up on him a long time ago.
Yeah, he's very stubborn man. I put reason to his stubbornness,
but,
and I make him try to feel happy about his stubbornness.
I still love him for me, because that's what my being does. And who's to say that you might go touch somebody outside, you know, a stranger. Mm-hmm. You look them in the eye and you tell them something like, hey, have a nice day, you know? And all of a sudden that person was having a bad day. They go interact with another person. You know, the law of seven figures says that seven relationships away is like somebody in China, right? You know, like, so who's to say that just by touching somebody through the butterfly effect, I did help Gary, because that person helped him out,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, and like, you know, more of like a weird, you know?
So back to the original question, really to that, if you really want to try to help empower somebody, don't just look at the person themselves. Look at their friends. Look at their circle. What are they doing? And how? Try to find a way to see what their world is and what their world looks like. You do that, you can probably help somebody out a lot more intensely than you can just going up to somebody and just telling them to have a good day, you know? You
of
can't
course,
tell...
That's a bad example.
It is, but...
Like, if just by being good, I do think that that can cause a train roll.
Yeah.
You find
a close person, you know, for example, our boss, he has close friends.
Yeah.
What if we talk to their close friends, you know, the close friends, close friends of the close friends of our boss.
Yeah.
So you talk to them, it can ripple up.
Yeah,
and
maybe. Well, I've given up on that project.
Yeah.
There's still the circles you
cannot even touch.
There's still the world. And
you know, I have a very small circle of friends and people that I talk to. You're one of the first people I've let into this very close circle in a long time.
Well, I appreciate that.
And it makes me realize, like, even if I'm just talking to the outside world, I don't let anybody into my close circle unless I really truly believe that they're, you know, suited for it. But if I try to talk outside of my circle, I try to grow my circle so I can try to have a more
Well, we do influence
more influence
our,
and impact.
We do influence our close circles, and they influence us.
Yes.
You know, so like, until you live alone. You know, like I'm. This is the first time in my life I've ever lived alone, and this is the least influence I've had on my psyche in my entire life, because it's just me and Odin is a subservient to me. So we don't have a lot of that adult interaction that is really pervasive that I found has affected me more.
Yeah.
You know, but
your peers are going to influence you a lot more than other
osmosis,
people, older and younger.
But I don't really care about any of that. Like. Because the first reason I do anything is very selfish, because I only do things for me.
And ultimately, why not? Why not?
And if you selfishly do it, if you selfishly love people, then there's never going to be a reason not to, first off. But, like, I'm more concerned with just, like, making a ripple everywhere, you know?
Yeah.
I think strangers are a far more bigger hammer than just affecting who we talk to.
And you're absolutely right.
We're in this osmosis loop with our close people. You know, we're just bouncing back and off each other. We're in our own little echo chamber box, you know? Like, but you can seriously have an impact. And I've had people really shock me before, strangers.
Yeah.
It's always the strangers who shock me.
It's always going to be a stranger. You're never going to know who...
Have you ever had somebody do something really kind for you that you have no idea who they were?
Not off the top of my head.
So I interact with a lot of strangers on Facebook. And
I rarely have talked to strangers. That's probably my issue.
I've consistently been the nicest things that have ever been said to me has been from my Facebook friends. You know, like,
and that happens.
And it's cool because we'll probably never see each other in the real world, but it's because I found these groups of very positive people. You know,
I kind of want to bounce off of that as well. With that, there's always going to be the opposite side. Now is I try to encourage people who have these negative people telling them, you know, they're bad, they're not doing good, you know, these toxic people. I try to encourage these people.
They're unavoidable because you're going to find ignorance everywhere.
Yeah, you're not wrong. I wouldn't say try to avoid them completely, but I try to embrace what they're saying into the opposite, basically what they're saying.
We're safe.
Okay, yes.
Good.
Basically take this negative connotation and turn it into a positive connotation for yourself.
What I've been seeing, just because I always have my toe into this, like, I've just talked to so many weird groups of people. It's just been one of my fascinations. You know, and maybe, like, it's because it's a lot of the groups, but this positivity movement, like, because there's a lot of people who do what I do. Like, just love and just trying to love, that's a big... easy movement.
I think it's a very rapidly growing one too.
I think that's all Jesus was actually saying, and they got really fucking perverted, and then they called it a church. But all Jesus was really saying was love people. You know?
Yeah.
And like, so this is an old idea, and for me, from my perspective, I see it growing.
It is definitely growing.
And so, like, and maybe, you know, that's what is working
with my content creating. I want to try to do these Twitch streams to try to include as many people into these streams, no matter how toxic it is to me or another person. Everybody's included here. We're getting everybody together, and we can talk as humans, rationable
fucking
humans.
That'd be good for you to have a community. You know how
exactly. I've been trying to grow a community for so long.
You might have to join one. You might have to join
You're
a couple.
You're not wrong.
You might have to join a couple just to see how they operate before you try to completely mastermind your own.
That's kind of what I'm doing as well with the one Twitch streamer that I watch. On a very consistent
weird culty shit too.
Yeah, you're not wrong. But the one Twitch streamer that I watch consistently lately for the past month now, I've been trying to actually get into their community and seeing how this community runs.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to grow a community out of that.
I bet you they have a Facebook group.
No. Don't I
just bet you they do.
No. Well, unless you really want to say that Instagram is part of Facebook.
Every major podcast that I'm into has a Facebook group about it. And then these are just massive communities of people who like each other because they like the same show.
Actually, yeah, you're right.
Those are communities.
And you're right.
You interact with people, and that's really healthy.
Maybe I should be looking at more subgroups. You know, these groups. So that's how these influential people actually grow. They have their own little small group that they made, and small groups form off of this, which actually grows the main group. And this just happens for, I don't know, however long you want to look at it.
Maybe people just start getting happier because they feel included.
Yeah, they have these groups that kind of are subgroups off of other people. And that's kind of what's happening with my Twitch streamer. You can look at 100 million other Twitch streamers that are the same, doing the same thing, and they don't have that big of an influence as this one Twitch streamer because they've had groups, they've had other people actually join and like this that are of that similar main group anyway.
And if you have a joint interest, it's a lot easier to forget all the differences for a little bit.
True.
And then all of a sudden you have something to talk about. Like, with certain types of people, that's the only way to talk to them, is you have to find their interest and talk about their interest with them.
Yeah.
Like, so-and-so at work, you know? Like, any conversation I've ever heard, you guys never talk about anything but video games, because that's your only shared interest.
That is our only shared interest.
There's a lot of things me and you don't share interest, but I have enough love for you that I'm going to step outside of that to open my ears to it.
And I'm open enough to let this kind of happen.
Yeah.
And it helps me.
I want to make sure you heard that correctly, though. But I love you enough to listen to anything you're interested in, because the fact that you're interested in it makes me happy.
Yes.
Like,
just, yeah. It that makes sense, though. It does just make sense.
Yeah. I do think that these little communities do make big things.
Yeah.
All right, this is a perfect opportunity to shut it off. We don't have to stop talking, but I just don't want to completely kill the audience. I really appreciate you coming in tonight.
Yeah.
I would love to have you back on again in a couple months, maybe, and we can talk about shit again.
I would like to.
And I'd like to hear about how your developments and your projects have grown.
And I kind of want to use these podcasts as a landmark for where I was. Mm-hmm. So I'm really interested to see what I will be.
Consider it an audio diary.
Exactly. It's been so hard for me to actually get into these diary systems, but I think this might be the way that I do it. Mm. So I'm adding into a direction that I want to go into, and I want to see where I was, and I want to see where I go. Mm-hmm. You know, what my direction is.
It helps.
It does.
Thank you for sitting with me, buddy. I really appreciate you.
Absolutely.